Number one, I've emailed and faxed around the call schedule for the next few months of Maximum Impact calls. And if you did not receive an email and or a fax about the next few months worth of conference calls, then send me an email with your updated contact information, and I'll make sure I update your file. I noticed in our database we have very few fax numbers, and even in some cases we're missing email addresses. So if you did not receive an email, actually several emails and a fax about the upcoming conference calls, email me at Toby Milroy, that's TobyMilroy at napma.com, NAPMA, and I'll update your record to make sure that you get in the loop on those things. We have much enhanced communication systems now for our members, and we're trying to, you know, make sure everybody has schedules far enough in advance to be able to plan for these calls and things like that. So make sure I have your correct contact information. Second is coming up in just a few weeks, the 28th through the 30th of the month, the 28th and 29th of the month, is the Extraordinary Marketing Ultimate Martial Arts Marketing Boot Camp in Denver that Master Oliver, you're hosting. Yeah. And it's a NAPMA member exclusive benefit this year. And if you want more information about that, you can email me as well. And I'll be emailing information around it tonight. And this is a phenomenal event every year. In past events, we've had guests like Bill Clark and Sergio von Schmeling and Tommy Lee and Rob Colasanti and industry heavy hitters like that. But the main focus of the event I'll be there too. I forgot. That's right. I will be there. And I'm actually pretty excited about our session. We're going to be talking about some of the some brand new evolutions in internet marketing that are helping schools generate traffic in their school for almost free. So let me reiterate that. The 28th, the 29th, and the 30th of this month is the Ultimate Martial Arts Marketing Boot Camp. Master Oliver, if I want more information about that, where should I go? I'm going to be emailing and faxing around lots of information over the next few days.
You know, we have a little website that really hasn't been updated very much at martialartsbootcamp.com. You know, this one really is Mile High Karate School's My Coaching Clients. You're going to have a Peak Performers Inner Circle meeting in conjunction with it, and then we're opening it up to NAPMA members at a greatly reduced cost. It really isn't open to anybody who's not in one of those categories. So really the best way would be either to email you or email me, and we can send them the registration form and the hotel information, one thing or another. It's going to be on all day that Friday and Saturday. And when we say all day, we have a tendency to kind of go late in the evening sometimes. So we're going to do, what were the dates again, Toby? It's going to be Friday the 28th.
Yes, sir.
Saturday the 29th. And we're going to do a Mile High Karate Schools tour on the 27th. That's Thursday evening. So if somebody flew in by mid-afternoon on Thursday, fly into Denver International Airport, we'll do a schools tour. The actual boot camp is going to be at the Denver Marriott West. They have to be registered, the next this week sometime in order to participate, so you can't, just kind of show up and register at the door. The other thing would be is to tie that in for all of those who are in this category. If they're interested in looking into what we're doing with Mile High Karate, on the day of the 27th, we're doing what we call Discovery Day, but it's basically an intro to the franchise, either to regional developer opportunities or intro into being a single school participant. If they are a Inner Circle member, you're doing an Inner Circle only meeting. Well, I'm sorry, Peak Performers.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Inner Circle are invited to participate in that one, if I understand correctly.
That's
going to be the evening of the 29th and Sunday the 30th. And that meeting will also be there at the Marriott. I'm doing my little millionaire wealth group. We're also doing a meeting the evening of the 29th and during the day on the 30th. And we're that weekend and the following week, our Mile High Karate schools are doing some pretty intense training with Jeff Smith and Carlos Machado and others. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. But if they want to email you, which I think is TobyMilroy@napna.com.
That's right.
Or email me, which is StephenOliver@MileHighKarate.com. It's StephenOliver. Then either one of us can send them back the complete schedule, the hotel contact information, as well as, if they're interested, the Mile High Karate information or the Peak Performer Inner Circle information.
Absolutely. And probably number next and last on our agenda before we get to our time management for staff and multi-school operators today is the Extreme Success Academy coming up in September. And we're now very firm on dates. We're still inking a final deal with a venue. But well then September 26th, 27th, and 28th, that's September 26th, 27th, 28th, is the Extreme Success Academy, which is was formerly known as the World Conference. And there's two things that you kind of want to know. Number one is it's an event unlike anything we've seen in the martial arts industry to date. We changed the name from the World Conference to the Extreme Success Academy for some very deliberate reasons. And the main reason is what we're not trying to do is be another trade show. We don't want to be, you know, a gathering of martial arts school owners to come and see the next new bright shiny object or to, you know, see the next piece of equipment that you can put in your school and things like that. What this is really all about is an intense educational experience for school owners who really want to take their school to the next level. And in conjunction with the Extreme Success Academy, the day before, which is the 25th, we're having an A to Z Blueprint Day, which basically will be myself, Rob Colasanti, you, Stephen Oliver, and several other of our guests. We'll be walking school owners and their staff sort of by the hand through the evolution of the professional revolution in the martial arts industry. So different ways to manage your curriculum, different ways to manage your accounts receivable, different ways to manage class schedules, programs, those type of things. We're going to basically peel back the curtain and show you all of the options and the spectrum of options of how to operate a martial arts school and show you what's being successful in which schools and what things tend to be less successful. And then you can go back to your school and make adjustments in your program, make adjustments in your presentations and things like that, you know, as you see fit. So this is a very intense learning environment. This isn't strictly a social experience, although there will be lots of opportunities for networking and actually a lot of facilitated networking activities.
Since it's the academy, we can have the frat party on the beach and, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, some entertainment as well.
Absolutely, there'll be plenty of opportunity for that, but certainly we're focused on some serious growth. Yes, sir?
And Toby, I don't know if we had Rob joining us today or not. Is Rob around?
He made
yes,
it.
Yes, I'm right here.
Hey, there you go. Okay.
Hey.
Fantastic. Good to have you, Mr. Colasanti. But on the Extreme Success Academy, and we've got to get on to our topic here, but you know, we're returning to Clearwater, Florida. And Toby, you were giving them a brief overview, but you know, if I were going to categorize it or summarize it, we're going to have the very best people at teaching a school owner how to run a single school at the highest level of both profitability and student quality, how to move into or to manage effectively multiple schools. We're also going to have some of the very best martial artists in the industry. We're also going to have two or three special guests that have unique niche topics that are useful for all the schools. In other words, we have one gentleman that we work very closely with who can help you go finance your own building or help you finance a little strip shopping center if you want to put your building in. We have another one who's very good at moving into the greener pastures and adding to your wealth with either your own building or into an ancillary commercial property. So we have a couple of people who are going to help you build wealth through your, you know, your own facility or through absorbing and acquiring the shopping center you're in. We'll probably, and we haven't confirmed dates, but we'll probably have Lee Miltier there, who's our success coach for Inner Circle and peak performers and for my coaching members in our Mile High Karate schools. We'll probably have Paul Hartunian there. We've got an interview with him coming up, and he's the expert on public relations. He's been on every major TV show and radio show, and he's really an expert at teaching small area-restricted businesses like a martial arts school how to maximize the publicity and the recognition in their area. And as far as martial artists, we're going to have Joe Lewis, Jeff Smith, maybe we can talk Bill Wallace into it. We'll probably have John Hackerman and his charge, Chuck Liddell, and I'm sure we're going to have Carlos Machado, and we're going to have several other of the top people in their area there. So we're going to have quite the lineup, but again, the goal is not to have 28 things going on, the crap tables happening and everything else going on, but the goal is really to have a focused learning experience and a focused networking experience and a focused training experience for success-oriented school owners and their staff. So I think it'll be a little bit of a breath of fresh air for everybody, but also an opportunity to really accelerate their school into high gear in the fall of 2008 and into 2009. And I guess the last thing as far as other events other than our topic is anybody who's on the call who's not in either the Inner Circle level or the Peak Performers level, you're certainly welcome to apply. It is a very limited membership in both levels. The Inner Circle, we pretty much filled up. We might have a spot or two for really highly qualified school owners. And the Peak Performers, we're now just qualifying and evaluating schools. Ms. Colasani, I think your ratio has been 40 or 50% rejection and 50 or 60% acceptance for the members.
You should mention that. I'm talking to you from my office right now, and for those of you listening, you can hear that. But that's a big pile of people that unfortunately didn't make it into the Inner Circle. Yeah, there's two seats left in there, and at this stage of the game, as the gatekeeper of the thing, I'm being very meticulous as to who comes into the group, and I don't mean any disrespect by that, but we've put together so far one hell of a group, and everybody in there has bonded, they've synergized. They're not competitors of one another. These people are actively and aggressively working to help each other fill in the missing pieces of their respective puzzles. Some of these guys are looking to literally double their gross in 2008, and I do believe some of them in this group will. So, again, I just want to make sure that we get the right fit for this group, but anybody is welcome to apply for it. I will review that application personally and then personally contact you back to give you my thoughts on your school, your current level of growth, and even provide you with some input on what you could do to maybe change the picture or improve the picture. And, of course, if you are qualified to be part of the Inner Circle group and I think you'd be a good fit, then it would be my honor to welcome you into the group. But there are, at this point, only two seats left for 2008.
Yeah, and probably more realistically is Peak Performers. And maybe the thumbnail sketch for people is the Inner Circle is about school owners who, in essence, for most people's perspective, have arrived, who are now looking to continue their career growth. So, like, you know, Eric Sabarge, who's on the cover of the Next magazine, he moved to school from $25,000 a month to $75,000 a month. We have a great interview with him coming up in the Maximum Impact materials. He's the type of school owner who's in Inner Circle. The school owners that are in Peak Performers, it's more about aspiration than it is necessarily a current accomplishment. So if a school owner is looking to move from $7,000 a month to $18,000 a month, $12,000 to $22,000 a month, Peak Performers might be the right fit for them. If a school owner is happy with where they're at and don't want to make any improvements, either one of those groups would be inappropriate, because these are all people who are looking to be movers and shakers, and the Inner Circle, they already are and are looking to accelerate that.
Absolutely.
So, good. Let's move into our main topic here. Our main topic is time management, and this is a continuation of our call from last month. But time management today from a standpoint of a school owner that has staff and or a school owner who is a multi-school owner? And that can be, I'm a school owner that has an instructor and a program director, maybe a fairly successful school financially, or I'm a school owner who's now into two or three locations or more. And a lot of this would be appropriate even up to a big multi-school operation. But I think our primary emphasis will be a school owner who now has two or three staff members that they're trying to manage, are probably not doing all of the teaching themselves, are now overseeing and supervising a true business operation rather than overseeing their own job, and it happens to be in a karate school. So let's get started on that topic. And Toby, I know you had a list of questions that had come in that you wanted to make sure we answered for any of them. And Ms. Colson, I'm sure you have the same thing. Do you have anything you want to start with, or should I start off on my list?
Bear into it.
Well, yeah, I've got a couple we could certainly start with.
Okay.
You know, like you said, there's a dramatic difference between I'm an owner operator, sort of chief cook and bottle washer, single school operator on my own, and I'm the one, when I have an idea at 9 o'clock tonight, I can implement it 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. And there's a big difference between that and when you have a staff that you have to sort of steer the ship on. What do you perceive are the biggest differentiations as far as how you manage your staff and then how you teach them to how you manage your time and then how you teach them to manage their time?
Well, let me answer that with two different things. And the first concept I'll give a couple people credit for. I always hate to take credit for something I didn't come up with, but the Nick Coquinas, I used to sit in his meetings, and he was kind of my first version of what we're doing with Inner Circle with their board of directors. And he used to tell the story of running the chain of Art Linkletter, Rotten Totten Dance Studios. And if you don't know his background, he was with Arthur Murray Dance Studios while he went to my college, when he went to Georgetown University. And then he ended up taking the franchise for Art Linkletter Dance Studios in Washington, D.C. And when he hooked up with Junery, he had, I believe, either 7 or 9 Art Linkletter Rotten Totten Dance Studios. And by the name, you can guess it was predominantly a kids-oriented. In fact, they picked them up in vans and bused them over to the school after school. So, and that was late 50s late 60s. But one of the stories that he used to have about time management was sitting at the desk and the mom calls and has questions of you of what size dance shoes should she buy, what size leotard should she buy. And what a waste of time it was to be like the head guy in the organization. And the parent is calling you with really mundane questions. And he had a couple of different stories about this that I always remember. One is he calls it driving the bus. And the driving the bus story is he had all these little vans that go around, and the guy calls in sick, and you end up being the guy driving the bus. And it's a useful story because what happens with owners who have staff is it's very easy to get sucked back into doing their job for them. And you never want to end up, in using Nick's terms, you never end up wanting to going in and driving the bus. Because it's just a really waste of time. I mean, driving the bus in today's dollars, this is maybe a $7 an hour activity. And if you're expecting that your time is worth $50 an hour, you don't want to let staff suck you into the driving the bus activities. The second part of that analogy is I've described it to many people is that the point at which I first became capable of managing my own time is when we first hired a receptionist. And now I never again answered a blind incoming call from student, prospective student, from anybody else. And, that's his version of the parent with a question about the leotard or the shoes. And what happens in many of the schools on the call is your name is on the front door, your name is in the Yellow Pages ad, your name is on the marketing materials that you're putting out, and therefore anybody who wants to sell you advertising in a Valpak, a bus bench or advertising on the butt of a dog walking down the street calls and asks for you by name. Also, any parent in the school who has any question, whether it be a billing question, what size foot pad should I get in order to do sparring, what size uniform does Billy need, calls and asks for you. Also, you end up with a myriad of calls that are just, you know, kind of ridiculous and non-useful, you know, and all the way down to, you know, the parent calling and asking you to go look up how many lessons the child has. And so once you're at a point with staff and once you're in a point of either a larger single school operation or you're in a multi-school operation, rule number one is you determine what the structure of your time is. You don't let students, certainly salespeople that you don't have a relationship with, vendors or anybody else, determine your use of time based upon what's convenient for them. So what you've got to do is you've got to get where, certainly in non-prime time hours, and what I mean by that is times when, you know, I call it 4 to 8 o'clock when you have parents and students in the school if you're a senior school operator. But you've got to get in non-prime time hours where people can't interrupt your time while you're trying to get something productive done. And everybody's knee-jerk reaction to this is that we're talking about lowering the quality of customer service. But that's not what it's about. What it's about is moving into what's called asynchronous communication in order to schedule appointments, scheduling appointments on your time, and not letting somebody interrupt your workflow. Studies have been shown, and this is all the way up the ladder in CEOs of major corporations who may or may not properly manage their time, is that most people never get more than 3 to 7 minutes of uninterrupted work time before they get interrupted. And so you've got to, one, eliminate the idea that you need an open door policy with staff. You've got to, two, eliminate the idea that you need an open door policy with students. And three is obviously you don't want to have an open door policy with people who, you know, certainly aren't standing in line to give you money and people who want to sell you stuff. So part of time management once you have staff in place is putting blocking mechanisms in place to keep people from getting to you. And number two is scheduling your work activity appropriately. Now, you may want to talk to the ValPak rep. You may want to talk to the person with the printing organization, and you may want to talk to Mrs. Jones about either their personal issues or about a renewal or about sizing her up for equipment. But you need to do it on a predetermined time that you dictate rather than have it be a time that they dictate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that you just said, I think that's the most important. If I'm a school owner and I'm listening and I say, well, you know, if I'm walking through the school and Mrs. Jones over here, who's now a leadership student, is paying me a bunch of money every month, you know, to take lessons, if she has a question, doesn't she deserve my 4 minutes of time to answer her question? And I think you just addressed it. Maybe you could reiterate this, but it's not about putting in blocking mechanisms so that that person doesn't get their problem solved or doesn't get their needs met, but it's about helping them to understand that your time is very valuable and that you can certainly help them with whatever their problem is, but you have to determine what time that's going to be.
Well, yeah, and the answer is, of course, any question that they have needs to be answered in a timely manner. It just doesn't have to be at exactly the time that they have a wild hair to give you a call or to wander in the school or to tap you on the shoulder in the middle of a class where you're trying to do renewals. So it's important that you become very unreasonable to everyone around you in the sense of not always bending to their immediate time needs and their media constraints. Now, clearly, you know, and again, I talked last time about you have quadrant one activities, urgent, important, stole this from Steve Covey, quadrant two, not urgent but important, you know, quadrant three, which is important but not urgent, and quadrant four, which is not important and not urgent, right? So your goal is to, in your business life, get rid of not important, not urgent, and also get rid of urgent and not important. And frankly, in most cases, focus on not urgent and important, and manage urgent and important so that you can get both quadrant one and quadrant two activities done. And I know I said a mouthful there, but it's a, you know, that's stolen from Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and also First Things First, that was by Covey as well. But that's what we're talking about is, you know, let's imagine maybe I'm in a situation, I'm a single school operator and I have three employees. Let's say I have two full-time employees, one part-time employee, and I'm at the school at 10 a.m. Now, here's the way I've seen some people operate. I'm sitting at my desk at 10 a.m., the phone rings, I answer it, it's the Valpak rep. Then I put down the phone and I try to get to work on whatever my project is for the day, and the phone rings next, and it's some guy who has some other scheme that he wants to sell me marketing activities on, right? And then I put down the phone and I get back to work, and now somebody walks in the door. And I'm not talking about a walk-in, I'm just talking about somebody walks in the door, let's say they're going door-to-door selling paintings. And now I go talk to that person. And then I try to get back to work, and my part-time receptionist comes in and wants to talk to me right then and there about the crisis going on in her life. And then I get back to work, and Mrs. Jones was on her way home from, you know, dropping Billy off to a dentist appointment. So she wants to come in and talk about why they're concerned about his progress and what's going on. And many people have had the experience of all of a sudden 7 hours in your day is shot. And the question is, at the end of the day, did you do anything that was worth $100 an hour, $200 an hour, $300 an hour, or did your day just get eaten up on other people's time schedule and other people's priorities? So it's very important to, one, manage those expectations and manage your time. Two, it's important to set appointments with yourself. Lee Meltier and Dan Kennedy call it time blocking, to block out times, appointments with yourself in order to get your high priority projects done where nobody's allowed to interfere with that. So the receptionist knows she can't walk into the office and put through a call to Mrs. Jones. They know that if the guy walks in trying to sell paintings, he's not allowed to come in. If somebody else that's a high-priority customer, let's say it's a student who's, in your example, paying $600 a month on a leadership program, that they know that to schedule an appointment for you to sit down and talk to her, because, of course, you want to meet her needs, but not to interrupt you during that time when you have that time blocked. So it's very important to manage that expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a phenomenal technique, by the way. I've just had conversations in the last couple of months with school owners who are in a mode of having a staff, and then obviously when they're physically not engaged in every minute-to-minute activity, things start to get missed, and you know, you have to make adjustments. And one of the things that – well, here's a great example. My brother-in-law is an attorney. And he's a relatively successful attorney. He's not as successful as he wants to be, but he's a relatively successful attorney. He's actually engaged in a big class action lawsuit right now with Ford, and it's this big case. And he complained to me a couple of months ago about how when he's working from home, he can never get anything done. You know, the kid starts crying and walks into his office and interrupts him, or the wife wants the keys to the car to go to the supermarket, or whatever it may be. There's a million distractions for him at home, which, ironically enough, is the same reason he doesn't work from an office anymore, because in the office, everybody would come and interrupt him. So you start to draw some parallels. The problem isn't really that people are getting to him. The problem is he lets people get to him, right?
Yeah,
So this was exactly the lesson, was this time blocking concept. I said, okay, well, if you lock the door from 10 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 o'clock in the evening or whatever it may be, and everybody in your family is trained that come hell or high water, don't open the door. You know, it's locked. I'm working. These are the things that I'm working on. These are the high-value activities for my day. I know we're very short on time today, but Dan Kennedy tells a really funny story about how he, as a child, broke his arm. And his father had these very strict rules about, you know, you don't come down into the office between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. because this is my work time. And he was in the barn, and a horse moved and broke his arm. And he went into his mom and said, "Mom, you know, my arm hurts, and there's just a little bit of blood. But, you know, don't go get Dad because it's not 5 yet," right? He was trained to know not to interrupt during those high productivity hours. And
so if you set a rule like that, it's you got to give them the exceptions. If you need to go to the hospital,
right,
come get me.
Right.
And by the way, you know, in a karate school, that was always one of the exceptions. If somebody's injured,
right,
I want to know about it this second. You know, and there certainly are other exceptions as well. But you do have to, with staff or with, you know, with anybody around you, you have to give them the predefined rules. Now, the other thing that goes with this is, when it comes to, let's say that there's, you know, three types of categories of people you're going to deal with: prospective customers, and that's info calls, walk-ins, right? And then you have vendors, and sometimes that means hopeful vendors, people who are trying to sell you something, people who, in fact, you've decided to buy something from, right? And then you have students. And some of them are, you know, prospective customers for the next thing you have to sell them. In other words, you upgrade them to Black Belt Club or Master Club or Leadership or whatever the next thing is. Each of those categories truly have to be dealt with differently. The easiest to train are vendors. People who are waiting for you to give them money are very easy to train. All vendors that I deal with are told this: you can at any time send me an email. I will set a time for us to talk on the phone by email, and we'll schedule a preset appointment where you can give me a phone number where I can get hold of you, or I'll give you the phone number where you can get hold of me, and anything that we do it by predetermined appointments. So when at all possible, I don't call them cold, and which of course means in almost all cases nowadays you get a voicemail. And when I do call somebody cold, I have a very clear message I leave them. You know, the message is, "Hi, this is Stephen Oliver with Mile High Karate. We were following up on X. I know we need to schedule a time to set an appointment. If you will email me at StephenOliver@MileHighKarate.com so that we can schedule an appointment, so we'll both be on the same, you know, same time availability and get on the line at the same time, so we don't continue phone tag, that's great." So of those three categories, vendors are easy to train. Anybody who's looking for you to give them money, they'll cooperate with your process. Now, the next category, which is difficult, is urgent and important. That's info calls and walk-ins. So those are people who, they got your ValPak ad, they got your direct mail solicitation, they got whatever it is, and they pick up the phone or they show up at the door, and they're interested in finding out about lessons. Okay? So these are people that you have to put staffing systems in place and or externalized methods to follow up with them in place, so that the minute that they have an interest, that you talk to them. Because, frankly, if you put them off for an hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, they may not have an interest anymore. You know, with Mile High Karate, if there's not a live person in that school to talk to them anytime 24/7, they get a live person who answers the phone, and they get a live info call script that happens, because we know an info call script that goes, or an info call that goes to voicemail. And, you know, Toby, you know, you and I talk to, and Rob, you do too, a lot of karate schools, and what they do is they leave a message, "Hey, this is Joe Smith. Here's my phone number. Call me back." And when you call the school any hour of the day, you get a voicemail. Well, I got to tell you, that doesn't work for info calls very well. And we did study year after year after year with Mile High Karate, and we found most people responding to our advertising called us between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. And I challenge most schools on the call to look in the mirror and make sure that you have a live person answering the phone for those people 9 a.m. and between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. and, frankly, between 9 a.m. And 9 p.m. because that's urgent and important. You've got to make sure that those people are going to talk to you when they want to talk to you. And when I say talk to you, that doesn't mean, you know, in my case, they wouldn't get hold of me for any of my high credit scores, but they are going to get hold of a live person who's got the script, who's trained to take a call, trained to make an appointment, trained to capture phone number, email address, et cetera. Then the third category are students. And the thing about students is they can very easily be trained. But if you don't train them, then they decide on their own accord to monopolize your time when it's convenient for them. So, you know, it's very important to explain to them when they come in, you know, here are your class times. If you ever have any questions, feel free to touch base with me when you're in class. Anything that's going to require more than a few seconds, we'll schedule an appointment. And usually we'll schedule that appointment on off hours so that we don't have 40 other people who are all vying attention at that time. So it's very easy to train the students, but they've got to be told that, and you don't have to be shy about it, because once they enroll, they will be cooperative, and you will have 5% of your students who won't be cooperative. Those are probably the ones you want to fire. So you're always going to have the dad who storms in the middle of the night and demands your attention. That's the one, if after two or three attempts to train them on the appropriate way to handle it, they probably need to be fired. But that's never more than 5%. It's a very small but very vocal minority.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take it to the next level, where now I've got these systems in place to, number one, facilitate the needs of a student should they have an urgent requirement, like they need the foot pads or they need whatever it is. Even though it's not important, it is urgent in their mind. And now I've got a staff member that's there to handle that, or that's their area of responsibility. How do I train that staff person to make sure that they're managing their time on a day-to-day basis the most appropriately?
Well, now let me give the disclaimer. That question could be a week seminar, right?
Yeah, well, exactly.
but let's talk about a couple of key principles. Key principle number one is you've got to learn to never let a staff member delegate upward.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I mean by that is it's going back to the drive the bus thing. So what I heard a marvelous recording one time. It's called The One-Minute Manager Meets the Monkey.
Yep.
And the metaphor for that is any task that needs to be done is the monkey. And he talks about, and it was William Onkin who did this, he talks about anytime you're meeting with a staff member, there's staff member comes in, he's got the task on his shoulder, which is the monkey on his shoulder. And when he's meeting with you, the monkey is now straddling both of your shoulders. And if you leave with the monkey, they manage to, in fact, delegate upward. So rule number one on staffing is get really good at recognizing and get really good at blocking a staff member trying to give you their job. And it happens day in and day out, minute by minute, during the evening. I mean, almost everybody in our society, unfortunately, has been trained to be very good at trying to give away their responsibility, and especially give it to their boss. And they'll have all kinds of good excuses, but you know, the one to be careful of is the, gee, Mr. So-and-so, this is a really important activity. I'm not sure I know exactly how to talk to Mrs. Jones. Can you handle it? Right? And the only way you ever say yes is you say yes by saying, well, Bill, sure, what I want you to do is come with me, take some mental notes. In fact, you have your little, you know, recording machine. Great, let's record it. So I will show you this one time how to handle it, so that in the future you can handle it yourself. So rule number one is never let an employee delegate upwards. In other words, never let them pass off their monkey, never let them give you their task and to move on, because otherwise you'll end up with, if you have three employees, what you just did is you multiplied your work effort by three because every one of them is trying to delegate upwards, right?
Absolutely.
The second thing about delegation is this, is there's a big difference between delegating and abdicating. Now, abdicating means is forgetting about the fact that you still have 100% responsibility for that role getting done. And, you know, I can give you lots of examples. What the loser's limp, the failure mechanism that many martial arts school owners have, and these are the guys who never, you know, never really make a good living in most cases, is they think that they can go out and hire a salesperson and turn the office over to this sales guy who's going to handle all the sales, and they're going to run the teaching end of things. And in fact, what they're trying to do is get rid of the stuff that they think they don't know how to do, or think they don't want to learn how to do. And what that is abdicating the, in part, one of the most important responsibilities in the school. And abdicating is when you hire an employee and you give them a task without concurrently having a schedule for when we're going to communicate about the progress of the task, a tracking mechanism so I know how well you're doing with the task, and three, an accountability mechanism so that I know if you're successful, you know, having some challenges or screwing it up. And so examples of that is, let's say that you have a program director in a school who is responsible for info call through the enrollment process. Well, that means your accountability mechanism is stats, right? So you need to know how many calls the guy's getting or the girl, and make sure that they're not just counting the ones that they did well with, but that they're counting all of them, because that's the number one thing that employees will do, is they'll give you numbers that make them look good. Number two is you want to track the ratio of how many of these calls made an appointment, how many of these appointments came in for an intro, how many of these intros enrolled, how many of these enrollments were full down payment, 12-month contract, whatever it is, the structure you want, how many of them were done properly, what percentage of those enrollments got through their first belt, what percentage of those enrollments did the upgrade I wanted to do, right? And now if I'm judging a program director whose responsibility starts at full contact or first contact and ends at enrollment, those last two numbers are important too, because they can be handling the call through the enrollment but screwing up the way they set the new student up to think about the way the school works. So if they're not properly pre-framing that student both to stay in the school and to progress to higher levels as far as programs, but clearly to progress appropriately to higher levels in the belts, they're not really doing the intro enrollment process right. It's not all about getting them to pay the money and sign the contract. It's about making sure you're creating a long-term relationship with the student. So as the owner, if you're not looking at those numbers, and I mean, I like to look at the numbers daily, but if you're not looking at it at least weekly, you're not really paying attention to how well the staff member is doing. So it's a common sin to hand off a task, but now to not really know what's going on. And you've got there's secret number one is stats. Secret number two is learning how to have the conversation and question the staff member appropriately. And again, in our day-to-day interaction with friends, we have a tendency to ask big, generalized, fluffy questions. You know, those on the call who have done much with Tony Robbins or with NLP, you know the five-finger pointer idea, right? Which is to move fluffy communication down to very specific. But the key with staff is to always make sure that everything is very specific. You know exactly what they did. An example would be, had the conversation just yesterday with a staff member, and I say, here's this list of 20 people. How are you doing with this? They say, well, I've called them all. Well, that doesn't mean anything to me yet, because I don't know how many of them they got hold of, how many of them they got the outcome that I'm looking for with, how many of them said no, how many of them they got hold of maybe a gatekeeper but not the real person. So if I say, here's these 20 people, how are the calls going, I want to know, of the 20 people, I got hold of five of the decision makers, four of them are doing what we're looking for them to do, one of them said no, I got hold of 10 gatekeepers or voicemail, and I got, whatever the other thing happened, I got another four that I had bad numbers for, and I got one that is a done deal. So I want to know very specifically what the outcome is, and that's the only way I know if they're doing their job or not.
And, you know, you just mentioned something. it was kind of a common thread throughout what you were just saying, and I hope everybody picked up on it, but maybe we should re-encapsulate it. It's when you're responsible for a staff member in the sense of being an employer. So that's your little employee. That's like your responsibility to make sure that he's accomplishing the things you want him to accomplish. And the worst thing in the world that's ever happened, I think, in the history of the world is piecework incentive, mindsets, employee mindset, where, like you said, the person says, well, I dialed all 20 numbers. I did my job.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't have anything to do